Greetings once again, America. My name is Doug McBurney, and you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's so good to have you back as we charge full force and look at the week that was, at the week that's coming. And we talk about the other shoe that has dropped. The other shoe has finally dropped. A lot of people in the financial world have been waiting to find out what was going to happen, and the other shoe dropped. The U.S. has been downgraded. Downgraded fiscally. Downgraded financially. Finally. Some bit of reality. As we're not exceptional anymore. We're just standard and poor here in America. But do we want to start with economic news? We'll get to some of that. Maybe. Maybe not. I mean, the downgrade, I guess it didn't really surprise anyone, but it apparently has shocked everyone. And not looking forward to seeing exactly what happens in the financial markets on Monday morning. But let's put that aside for the moment, because we do have important news to cover here at the Weekly Worldview, the pulse of conservative talk on the internet. That's right. We're going to start with a story out of, well, I don't know where it's out of, because I don't know where current TV happens. It's probably New York or Hollywood, or certainly nowhere in between. It's either New York or Hollywood, current TV. That's Al Gore's vehicle. I've got a quote here from Real Clear Politics. Al Gore was quoted he was asked a question, apparently, by Keith Olbermann, if you can believe that. And regarding America and the potential for civil unrest. And Al Gore was quoted as saying the following, quote, "Now, they've been around for a while, those Tea Partiers, but they are spreading far and wide and more people are getting involved. And we need an American Spring, you know, like the Arab Spring. You know, the nonviolent part isn't finished yet. Excuse me, Mr. Gore, have you seen Syria? Have you seen Egypt? It appears that the violent part isn't over. Are you calling for an American Spring, an uprising of Muslim extremists here in the United States? No, now just relax. We need to have an American Spring. A kind of American Tahrir Square. Nonviolent change, where people from the grassroots get involved again. And not the Tea Party style." Unquote. Al Gore said that the proceeding on current TV's Countdown with Keith Olbermann. So it's kind of funny that Al Gore owns current TV. He's the, according to Real Clear Politics, he's the founder and chairman of current TV. And he snagged one of the biggest hosts in the country, Keith Olbermann, signed him to a contract. I mean, did Al Gore start a network just so he could still get booked for interviews? Keith Olbermann on current TV? You can't make this stuff up. I mean, you couldn't have written that as a comedy sketch, for crying out loud. But there it is in broad daylight with a straight face for all the world to see. Albert Gore Jr. interviewed by Keith Olbermann over at current TV, calling for an Arab Spring here in America, but only the nonviolent part. Yeah, okay, Al. Well, good luck with that career you got going. All right, so from a bumbling, dim-witted ex-vice president to Afghanistan, from the Associated Press in Washington, D.C., U.S. officials tell the AP that they believe that none of the Navy SEALs who died in a helicopter crash in Afghanistan had participated in the raid that killed Osama bin Laden, but sources do say that more than 20 Navy SEALs were among those lost in the crash in Afghanistan. A helicopter, apparently shot down by the Taliban. And a little disconcerting to know that the Taliban has this much capability still, 10 years later. And I remember thinking when the war started, we're going to go in and we're going to make war with men who fight in bare feet on the tops of mountains in the middle of the winter. I think it's going to be a long haul. And indeed it has turned out to be just that. And our hearts go out to the families of the warriors killed in this. It's simply astonishing that the Taliban could, number one, shoot down a helicopter. And number two, the helicopter just happens to have 20 Navy SEALs on board. It's almost as if they have some intelligence sources that might be inside of our own military structure over there. I'm just saying, I'm not saying we've been infiltrated by the enemy. But one could suspect that under the bumbling, stumbling administration of Barry Ho. And whoever is the Secretary of Defense this week, I can't even remember who it is. Didn't they just switch off with some Clinton apparatchik who took over? I just can't remember. It's so depressing. I try not to read those stories. But it's just awful. Just awful over there in Afghanistan. And still, to this day, we've not built a single church in Afghanistan, nor have we funded a single missionary, Christian missionary. And so we leave those people to suffer under bad government and bad religion. And we've spent 10 years of blood and treasure to do what? Pretty embarrassing, America. Talk about a downgrade. You had guys with towels wrapped around their heads shooting your helicopters down with rocket-propelled grenades. That's a downgrade, for crying out loud. All right, let's move into the politics file. Try to have a little bit of a fun and get a little bit of an education here. We're going to go to Houston, Texas. This is a story from the vaunted New York Times regarding Governor Rick Perry. Governor Rick Perry held a big to-do in the greater Houston area this past weekend, Saturday. And according to the New York Times, Rick Perry, governor of Texas, called on Jesus to bless and guide the nation's military and political leaders. And, quote, those who cannot see the light in the midst of darkness. According to the New York Times, in a 13-minute address, Governor Perry read several passages from the Bible during a prayer rally he sponsored. Thousands of people stood or kneeled in the aisles or on the concrete floor in front of the stage, some wiping away tears and shouting, Amen. Okay, Mr. Perry. Let's see. Now, they've got the quote. I read all published reports of Mr. Perry's comments, and I did not hear the name of Jesus Christ, but perhaps I was reading truncated, redacted versions. And perhaps the New York Times couldn't print the name of Jesus Christ because they have a policy against it. So I'm not going to say that Governor Perry did not mention Jesus Christ by name. I just haven't seen it in print. I guess I need to find a transcript of his entire remarks and prayer before I jump on Mr. Perry for not mentioning Jesus Christ, because perhaps he did. Because Mr. Perry is obviously following the first rule of Republican politics. If you want to win the Republican nomination, the first step is to bamboozle the Christians. That's right. Well, the gullible Christians, anyways. You know, the mega churchers, the evangelicals, the United Methodists. No? Oh, that, yeah. Well, that's true. The United Methodists are already registered Democrats. If not undergoing sex reassignment surgery as we speak. Oh, by the way, according to the New York Times, Mr. Perry is a lifelong Methodist who regularly attends an evangelical megachurch near his home in West Austin. That's three strikes and you're out, Mr. Perry. He's a Methodist, an evangelical, and a megachurcher. So is Rick Perry going to be the new salvation of America? Well, he's certainly setting himself up to be so, and he's on the bamboozle the Christians leg of the Republican nomination. Now, you'll remember, ladies and gentlemen, that the bamboozling of the Christians only lasts very early in the primaries. And after that, he'll work on bamboozling everyone else. I'm not buying it, Mr. Perry. I don't think I don't think you're the one. But I'm willing to give Mr. Perry a chance. And so we'll have to listen to what men, and well, the fact that he's a Methodist doesn't say he's a United Methodist. It just says he's a Methodist, but that can be problematic enough, trust me. Anyway, I'm not jumping on the Perry bandwagon. Just like I didn't jump on the Trump bandwagon when he went on CBN and tried to bamboozle the Christians out there. He turned out to be pretty flaky. Of course, with the hairdo, you should have known that. And the six wives, or three and a half. How many wives? Anyways, hard to believe that he's an actual born-again believer. Let's just put it that way. All right. Oh, who? Donald Trump?
Yeah.
He said he was. He went on CBN, said he was a Christian, born again.
Just like Jane
Fonda. And she wasn't even running for president. I think she was just trying to sell some exercise tapes. Sales were a little weak, so she went after the gullible Christian demographic, which is always fairly reliable. All right, now, on from gullible Christians to the real hardcore Christian warriors. This is a story from KRTV up in Montana. Earlier this week, the Montana Secretary of State certified another ballot issue for signature gathering. CI-108 would define a person to include all human beings at every stage of development, including fertilization or conception. Dr. Annie Bukasic of the Montana Pro-Life Coalition is heading up the movement. That's Dr. Annie Bukasic and the Montana Pro-Life Coalition. I had a chance to work with a few of the folks who worked on the 2010 ballot initiative up there in Montana. And while it didn't win, the Montana pro-life community got the message that personhood is the wave of the future. It is the epicenter of the pro-life battle. And up there in Montana, they intend to take the measure back to the ballot in 2011. And I've just got to salute them up there. Annie Bukasic and the Montana Pro-Life Coalition, thank you for giving us some hope that there is some redeeming quality left in this nation. And it's the Montana Pro-Life Coalition and the folks who will support them in their effort that are the only reason that the Almighty God has not snuffed out the lamp of America. Let's see. Oh, the Montana Pro-Life Coalition attempted to pass a similar measure in the 2010 election and failed. But did they really fail? Now, they may have failed to win an election, but folks, if you read the Bible, and if you pay attention to life in general, you should know that the majority is evil. The majority does not worship God. They don't even acknowledge Him as God. They spend their entire lives avoiding issues like God, judgment, and where their eternal souls will dwell for eternity. So I wouldn't count on winning an election. But it's a tremendous ministry, a great opportunity to introduce concepts to people that they have never considered, like the fact that an unborn baby is a person who deserves the right to life, and to present it in a way that they've perhaps never thought about it before. And in doing so, some minds will be changed, and even some lives will be saved. And on election day, what happens on election day is really secondary. But eventually, personhood will win the day. I do believe. I don't know if it'll be by an election. Could be. Could win in Mississippi in 2011 when they vote on it in November. That could happen. Could be other events that line up that convince people that the time for uncontrolled self-indulgence is over. And it's time to respect the rights of other people, innocent people. And so our hats are off to the Montana Pro-Life Coalition as they introduce yet another personhood initiative. By the way, that all started right here in Colorado in 2008, at least the modern iteration of the personhood movement. And we're so glad. And we thank God for those people who are willing to sacrifice so much and to be laughed at and to be mocked and to be shunned, even by mainstream pro-life organizations. Because it is charisma and leadership like that that eventually, Lord willing, via the message of the personhood of all human beings, will eventually win the day. Don't give up. Don't give up. I want to start lobbying that that be the official theme song of the personhood movement, at least the official secular song. It gets me all fired up. Now, I got a little bit long on that segment. I've got to admit that I am biased toward personhood, but I've got so much news that I just don't know what to do. I don't know if we can make it through it all, so I'm going to have to go a little more quickly as we go forward. But I do want to remind you, those of you who do believe, that there is some redemptive quality left in this country, that there is a remnant worth saving. I believe personhood is probably the best way to invest your time and your efforts into preventing the collapse of America. Forget the markets. Forget buying gold. Invest in righteousness. Invest in truth. Give some money to the Montana Pro-Life Coalition like I will this week. And also give some money to Personhood USA, the umbrella organization that's making it all happen. All right. Now, let's get more into the politics file. From WorldNet Daily, there's some Tea Partiers are upset. They're upset with Jumpin' Joe Plugs Biden. Leaders of the Tea Party Patriots have demanded an apology from Vice President Joe Biden for calling members of Congress who support a limited government and a philosophy of don't spend what you don't have, terrorists. That's right. Joe Biden compared the Tea Party to terrorists. Do I have the actual quote here? I probably don't have the quote. But he basically said that Republicans in the Congress acted like terrorists during the recent debt ceiling crisis debate deal. Tea Partier Jenny Beth Martin, a national coordinator for Tea Party Patriots, said, quote, it's offensive, it's false, and it's shocking. Biden's statement that the Tea Party members of Congress acted like terrorists while opposing President Obama's demand to raise the borrowing limit is false, it's offensive, it's shocking. And she says, we demand a full and unequivocal apology. And you know what, Jenny, I got to say, just calm down, okay? Might I remind you that in this nation, violent and provocative rhetoric is completely acceptable throughout politics. In fact, it's violent rhetoric that prevents us from actually engaging in violence. So comparing us to terrorists, I might compare Dr. Grossman down in Durango to a terrorist. Of course, he dismembers children with his medical instruments as he kills them and butchers them. So that might be a more apt analogy. But getting compared to a terrorist, it's just good, healthy debate to me. You know, it's just it's fine, and we should all quit asking each other to apologize to each other, and we shouldn't have such thin skin. In fact, I would have said, Mr. Biden, it's you and your president who are acting like terrorists, holding the nation's credit worthiness hostage. I would have retorted with the same. Throw it right back in his face. Quit whining and asking for apologies. What are you, a liberal? For crying out loud. Yeah, what good's it going to do if Plugs Biden apologizes to you? Is that going to change? Well, you remember when he had the hair plugs? I tell you what, a picture like that sticks with you even 30 years later. Man, that was creepy. All right. Anyway, Mr. Biden, I don't want your apology. I think you're a terrorist, you punk chump. Now, let's up the ante. Let's go. Let's get it on. Politically, of course. With words instead of actual violent acts. Calling someone a terrorist is not like actually blowing them up or chopping their head off. Bunch of wimps. All right. More from the politics file. This is from the Washington Times regarding the debt ceiling crisis debate deal, or whatever it was. The Washington Times reports that U.S. debt shot up $239 billion within 48 hours of the government getting the new borrowing room through the debt limit increase deal. So within 48 hours... we've already blown up $239 billion. I can remember Reagan being taken to task for $240 billion yearly deficits, and this happened within 48 hours. So what kind of deal did we get? Well, the debt went from 14.2 trillion to 14.5 trillion on last Tuesday. That increase puts the government, according to the Washington Times, that increase puts the government already remarkably close to the new debt limit of $14.694 trillion, which means one day's new borrowing ate up 60% of the $400 billion in space that Congress granted the president this week. So you hand Obama a blank check, that boy knows what to do with it. I mean, he's not messing around. Did I say boy?
Yeah.
You know, that could be considered racist these days.
Oh, yeah.
Should I edit that out?
Yeah.
No, I'm not going to edit it out because I meant to. I could. That's it. Mr. Obama, I just want to offer a sincere apology to you or anyone else I might have offended, because I didn't mean boy in the sense that you might have meant it. I meant it in the sense of an immature, inexperienced child who's in over his head and should not have the job that he has. I sincerely apologize, and I hope you'll forgive me. Okay, thank you, Mr. President. According to the Washington Times, the debt fight was so bruising that President Obama last Wednesday took his debt team out to celebrate by buying them hamburgers at the Good Stuff Eatery, a well-known burger joint on Capitol Hill. At a meeting of his cabinet later in the day, the president said the debt increase gave the government some room to maneuver. He's maneuvering, all right. He blew $240 billion in a matter of hours. So talk about maneuver. Barry Ho knows how to maneuver. He knows how to get around. Barry said, quote, "We have now averted what could have been a disastrous blow to the economy, and we have identified on the front end over $1 trillion in spending reductions that can be done sensibly and safely without affecting core programs." That was before the downgrade, by the way, basically. By the way, the previous one-day record debt increase was $186 billion, set on June 30th, 2009 by Barry and his minions over there. That's just great. So some more economic news, ladies and gentlemen, from CNBC. CNBC reports that Europe is a train wreck and on the brink of a major financial crisis. That's according to Scott Minard, CEO of the fixed income firm Guggenheim Partners. He said, quote, "The way Europe is operating right now, it's what I call recently cognitive dissonance, basically doing the same thing, thinking they're going to get a different outcome. They keep borrowing more and more liquidity, and they keep throwing more liquidity at it, thinking it's going to get better, and it's not." He added, "If Europe fails to recognize that it has a structural problem, not a liquidity problem." Is it a structural problem, Mr. Minard? I mean, I respect your opinion on economics. But they've abandoned their Christian faith. They've killed over one-third of the next generation. The children allowed to live have not been properly trained or disciplined. And they've hoped that immigration from Africa and the Middle East would fill the gap. And well, it will. It will, but not after all the children of Europe participating in collective cognitive dissonance are all purged from the society, and Europe ends up under a probably financially well-run Islamic caliphate. So a little more than a structural problem, I believe, over there in Europe, and it's infected us as well. Another article on economics and politics from the Financial Times. The global crises of financial and housing markets are now being superseded by new crises of governments. The fiscal challenges for the weaker members of the Eurozone are early warnings, as are analogous problems in American state governments weighed down by unfunded pensions and health care liabilities. Without action, this new crisis of state competence could soon become just as damaging as its recent financial predecessor. Despite relief at the debt ceiling agreement, America's fiscal situation remains deeply problematic. Any attempt to head off a crisis of government competence must begin with serious long-term reform. Reductions in the long-term path of entitlement outlays have to be put on the table, with increases in ages of eligibility as a part of any solution. Well, That's all well and good, but the entitlement generation that we have raised will not give up their government cheese or the immorality that they've learned from their religious and political leaders. It's my humble opinion that only a major correction, both financial and cultural, will keep us from going over the edge, which I believe is what conservatives allowed Barry Ho to do last week when they signed on to that deal. We have gone over the edge, ladies and gentlemen. Now it's just a matter of how hard do we hit bottom, because right now we're in a free fall. Kind of scary, you know, especially if you're a guy like me. I'm an independent businessman. I survive on straight commissions. So I don't want there to be a collapse. I don't want there to be a crumbling. I don't want a hard landing economically. But hey, I tell it like it is. I'm telling you what I see. And I don't see just an economic problem. I see a cultural, moral, spiritual problem. And well, it's manifests itself in many ways. Let's go to the domestic tranquility file from the Daily Mail in London. Thelma Carter, a woman, Thelma Carter, last week struck her live-in boyfriend, Robert Higdon, with a spiked heel of a stiletto shoe at their trailer park home in Augusta, Georgia. So what are the odds? I know. Authorities are unsure how many times Mr. Higdon was hit with the shoe before he died. So she killed him with it. So, yeah, it started out as just kind of a funny story about a couple of hillbillies in the trailer, but it ends up in murder. Carter has been charged with murder. She beat him to death with the spiked heel of a stiletto shoe.
Wow.
I'm not sure what they were arguing about or what Mr. Higdon may have done, but I'm certain that it did not justify the bludgeoning with a stiletto shoe. But indeed, it has happened. This is in Augusta, Georgia. Yeah. Bible Belt. So that's one manifestation. People know undisciplined, untrained children grow up to be undisciplined, untrained adults, and they're not very good problem solvers. And when they get mad at their live-in boyfriend over something silly, they might just kill that person because people have no boundaries anymore. And now from the Justice File, this is the most shocking story of the week. I cannot believe this is true, but it is. This is from the Burlington Free Press. A central Vermont man who was acquitted of a murder charge in the fatal 2002 shooting of a co-worker called police and confessed to the crime last month, but there's nothing state authorities say they can do about it. A county jury in 2004 found Isaac Turnbaugh not guilty of first-degree murder in the killing of Declan Lyons. He's found not guilty, but he called into the authorities last month and confessed to the crime. Well, Attorney General William Sorrell said his office prosecuted the murder charge against Turnbaugh, and he said, quote, "You only get one bite at the apple. It's double jeopardy," Sorrell said, referring to the legal doctrine that says a defendant can be put on trial for a crime only once. After an acquittal, Sorrell added, "You can go out on the courthouse steps and confess, and the state can't do anything." He said the statute of limitations in which non-murder charges might be filed has expired, and the evidence would have to be something not used in the murder trial. Okay, hello, Mr. Attorney General. I don't think his confession was included in the last murder trial. And may I ask, are you more dedicated to some legal doctrine than you are to actual justice? Apologize to the band, but you'll have to put away the instruments, boys. We're running out of time. We don't have time. We've got to get on with the news. More from the Justice File, as if that wasn't shocking enough for an attorney general to say that you can walk right out on the courthouse steps and confess to a murder for which you were just acquitted, and then they can't prosecute you for perjuring yourself and lying. Anyway, the cultural crisis manifests itself in many ways. We'll go back to the Justice File. From the Rapid City Journal, a routine police stop turned into a deadly shootout in a North Rapid neighborhood late last Tuesday afternoon that killed one Rapid City police officer and wounded two other officers and the gunman. Okay, so I got so many problems with this. Okay, just from a journalism standpoint, a deadly shootout killed one police officer, wounded two others, and the gunman. It's as if the guns just showed up and started blasting away at people. I think it was the gunman who killed the police officer and wounded two other officers, and I hope that the police officers shot and wounded the gunman. But by reading that paragraph, it's really hard to tell what happened. It sounds like a couple of M16s showed up and decided to just go on a rampage. But anyway, this is the first police officer shot dead in the line of duty in Rapid City since 1916. Wow. That was early on in the progressive era. You know, I remember that from social studies class in sixth grade. I remember an entire module on the progressive era. And I was just a little kid. I didn't know much. It all sounded like a great idea to me. The progressive income tax, get rid of the death penalty, all of that stuff. But when I came home and talked to my dad about it, he said, "Don't listen to those teachers. They're a bunch of idiots. They're communists. Bunch of heathens." Yeah. And my dad gave me permission to fail my eighth grade science test. The only test I ever failed in school. Because in order to pass it, I would have had to acknowledge macroevolution. You know, from the goo to the zoo to you and all that. And my dad said it was okay not to. And so I didn't. I answered the questions correctly and was given an F. Anyway, so having been through all that, I don't send my children to the public schools because I don't want to have that kind of conflict. I'd just as soon not have them have to do that. And it's working out okay so far. Going all right. All right, now let's move more into the politics file. Now, this is just a feel-good story. I don't know why this makes me feel so good. It's maybe this is the only good thing that happened in America all this past week. That made the national news. And so I wanted to let you know about it from the Washington Times. Elk Creek, Nebraska, population 112, may not be so tiny much longer. Reports suggest that the southeastern Nebraska hamlet may be sitting on the world's largest untapped deposit of rare earth minerals, which have proved to be indispensable to a slew of high-tech and military applications, such as laser pointers, stadium lighting, electric car batteries, and sophisticated missile guidance systems. Canada-based Quantum Rare Earth Development last week received preliminary results from test drilling in the area there in Nebraska, showing significant proportions of rare earth minerals and niobium. Yeah. What's niobium? I'm not too sure what niobium is, but it's very important. The potential mining operation, the first in the U.S. in a decade, could have international impact as well. U.S. officials and lawmakers in Congress have been eager to break the near monopoly on global production of the 17 rare earth elements in China, which has shown its willingness to use its power in the markets for political ends. So we've come across a great cache of rare earth minerals and niobium, which is apparently very important. I didn't bother to find out exactly why niobium is important, but all I know is if the Chinese are the only ones that have it and we found some, well, that's the only good news out of the whole country this week. And just in case you were starting to feel good, let me just hit you with this from the culture file. The Staten Island District Attorney's Office, this is according to NBC News in New York, The Staten Island District Attorney's Office says James Moss punished his 9-year-old son Christopher last year because he thought the young lad had stole a $20 bill from his wallet. Now, I'm all for punishing a child if he steals a 20 out of your wallet, but listen to how Mr. James Moss handled the situation. Prosecutors say that he beat him with a spatula. That's where I would have stopped right there. I would have beaten him with a spatula and said, "Don't take money, son." After he beat him with a spatula, he put his hands over two hot oven burners and then shoved him naked into an oven for several minutes. He said to the boy as he was in the oven naked, "I'm going to burn you alive." Moss reportedly yelled that to the lad as he was in the oven. Now, the father did not turn on the oven, but the boy's hands were burned when the father held them over the burners on the stove. Folks, since the 1970s, a generation of completely incompetent parents has raised now a generation of out-of-control, undisciplined children. And that generation is now abusing, they think they're raising the next generation, but they're actually abusing the next generation. It's a catastrophe, increasing exponentially year over year as the products of the government schools from generations past visit their sins upon their children. You know, and folks, we got two choices. Return to God and accept rebuke and correction, or be enslaved by the Muslim caliphate that will flourish in our absence of leadership. Or the humanists will take over, and it'll be like Berlin, 1934, all over again. But I don't think there are... I think my money would be on the Muslims to dominate this millennium if we don't return to God and accept rebuke and correction. And I'm talking about you heathens out there. I mean, we Christians have plenty of our own problems, but at least we know we have problems. At least we have a standard against which we can judge ourselves. Your humanistic evolutionary standard is leading to a generation of parents who by default abuse their children because they just don't know what else to do. It does not bode well for the future. What can I say? All right. Now, speaking of training and discipline, let's go to the war file. This is from Fox News. The Air Force, ladies and gentlemen, has suspended a course that was taught by chaplains for more than 20 years because the material included biblical passages. The course was called, quote, "Christian Just War Theory," unquote, and it was taught by chaplains at Vandenberg Air Force Base out in California, and it used scripture from both the Old and New Testaments to show officers that it can be moral to go to war. But, the group Military Religious Freedom Foundation said the course violated the constitutional separation of church and state, and they filed a complaint, and the class was suspended the same day the complaint was filed. Air Force officials will determine whether to revise the material or simply end the class. Yeah. We've got a quote here from Mikey Weinstein. I'm not making this up. Mikey Weinstein is the president of the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, and he says, quote, "We are very pleased that the Air Force suspended the program. Had they not done it, we would have filed an immediate class action lawsuit in federal court to force their hand." So the humanists, they won't take no for an answer. If there's any curriculum, if there's any good sense out there, the heathens are on the march to purge it from our civilization. Teaching Christian just war theory, it could be a very sensible, credible, and worthwhile course, and therefore the diabolical humanist, unwashed heathen scum hate it. They hate anything that smacks of truth, anything that implies there may be some objective truth. And the Air Force, the governing officials, they just scurry and run and hide. Mikey, what do you think kept your parents or your grandparents out of the ovens over in over in Eastern Europe during World War II. It was these officers who learned about Christian just war theory. Mr. Weinstein, for crying out loud. It's unbelievable. Do I have anything else here? Mr. Weinstein said he was particularly concerned about a passage of Scripture that was taught from the New Testament book of Revelation. The passage describes Jesus as a mighty warrior. Mr. Weinstein doesn't like that idea at all. And believe me, folks, it's not because he's Jewish and he's got anything against Jesus from a Jewish perspective. It's because he's a raging humanist heathen, hell-bent on destroying civilization and making great headway, at least this week, as Air Force officials couldn't abandon this course fast enough to make Mikey Weinstein happy. Mr. Weinstein, I hope you enjoy your retirement when the Muslims take over. I'm sure you'll fare quite well as a Jewish lawyer. All right. Now, in a related story, this is related, folks. I've been talking about the lack of training, the lack of discipline, and the purging of truth from our civilization. And here's a fine example from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, which I think Rush Limbaugh calls it the Atlanta Urinal and Constitution, which is pretty good. Yeah. I think Mark Levin actually wrote that line, but Rush delivers it fairly well. A story from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Parents of students at an Atlanta public school where cheating was alleged to have occurred on a statewide test last week defended their school and teachers at a town hall meeting. Yeah. One of several parents is quoted as saying, "We've been extremely pleased with the instruction my children have received." So that's a quote. I don't want to be picky here, but there's a number and there's a number disagreement. "We've been extremely pleased with the instruction my children have received." So even the parents can barely speak English. They probably went to the same school. Anyway, she was one of several parents who stood up for the cheating teachers and administrators. She was among a parade of parents who defended a school where the principal has been asked to resign because of the scandal surrounding 2009 competency tests. The parents are worried about the effect the scandal and the investigation will have on their kids. Never mind that you've got a corrupt administration and the teachers are corrupt. You're not worried about that, but this scandal and this investigation, that could harm the self-esteem of our children. And now here's the kicker. Also, last Tuesday, about 15 clergy, parents, and community members attended the early portion of a planned six-hour vigil outside the Atlanta Public Schools office. Participants sang songs and offered prayers on behalf of the leadership, the teachers, and the children in Atlanta Public Schools. The event was organized by the Right Reverend Timothy McDonald of First Iconium Baptist Church in East Atlanta as a way to highlight the work of the thousands of teachers and employees not associated with the teaching scandal. Great. A Baptist preacher, a blind guide. Everything's okay, ladies and gentlemen. Most of the teachers weren't involved. The public schools are good for your children. That's what the Baptist minister there in Atlanta is telling the sheep. And he is not doing a good job shepherding the flock. Let's just put it that way. He should be warning parents that if you are putting your children in the public schools, you are sinning against God and you're sinning against your children, and you will be held accountable on Judgment Day. Make some sacrifices in your life. Sell the Escalade and keep the kids home and homeschool them. Take your wife out of the workplace. Sacrifice half your income. Maybe move into a house that's half as big. Maybe you drive a car that's twice as old. But keep your children out of the jaws of hellfire. That's what that pastor should be preaching. But instead, he's telling them that everything's okay. And here's another example, a quick one from Missouri. Missouri Governor Jay Nixon has signed Missouri State Bill 54, which bans students and teachers from communicating and being friends on social networking sites like Facebook. The law was created to prevent inappropriate relationships between children and teachers. Okay, so we've got inappropriate relationships happening all the time. We read about them every week in the news. And so what is Governor Jay Nixon and the Missouri legislature's solution? Don't let them friend each other on Facebook. Yeah, brilliant. I told you there's a lack of training, there's a lack of discipline, that there's a lack of wisdom. There's a purging of wisdom, from our culture. And folks, that wisdom will not be easy to recover once this generation passes from the scene. It may be gone forever. One more line from this story, which, by the way, was from MSNBC. I can't believe I pulled a story down from MSNBC, but I did. Regarding this new law that bans friending, teachers can't friend students on Facebook, the article says, although some critics have said the concept sounds positive on the surface, they worry it may imply that teachers cannot be trusted. And I would certainly never want to imply that. No, no, I will always state it directly. Weekly World View. I'm Doug McBurney. We're rounding third, and we're heading for home. We're almost out of time. I got a bunch of stories, so I'm going to have to go quickly here. Please try to pay attention. I've got a story here. Okay, now, I have had a report from my extremely attractive audio engineer that she's concerned that I am obsessed with homosexuals, and she said, my dear, could you please try and go one show without mentioning any homosexuals? And I said, my dear, I would like to, but they're pouring out of the closet like flies, like bats out of the mouth of a cave they're pouring out. They're in the news every day. I simply can't avoid it. And she said, okay, I'm just telling you that it's getting a little tired, and you sound obsessed. And so, little housekeeping. The members here at the McBurney compound, we're going to be relocating to the McBurney compound west for the next few weeks. And the show's going to be on hiatus. And so I won't be back with you for a couple of weeks. But when I do come back, I will try to do a show where I do not mention a single homosexual, at least not intentionally. Because, I mean, you never know who's in the closet these days, right?
Can you do that?
Is there anyone even in the closet anymore?
No,
you don't think I can do it, do you?
Well, after you come back from California.
2 weeks in California, you're going to come back with... Well, that might be a tall order. So I'll do a show in the last week in August, but maybe September I will try to do at least one show without mentioning a single homosexual. But for now, let's go to Sao Paulo, Brazil. The City Council of South America's biggest city has adopted legislation calling for a heterosexual Pride Day to be celebrated on the third Sunday of each December. The legislation's author, Carlos Apolinario, said the idea for a heterosexual Pride Day, he says, quote, it's not anti-gay, but it's a protest against the privileges that the gay community enjoys. I have no problem and no trouble coexisting with gays as long as their behavior is normal, unquote.
What's normal behavior?
Well, the fact that they're homosexuals means they're not normal, for crying out loud. Have you looked at the mechanics of that whole thing? That's not normal. But anyway, the Brazilian Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgendered Association has criticized the legislation, saying that it could provoke homophobic violence. Violence, I tell you. We have a quote from the LGBT community. They released a statement. They said, the celebration of heterosexual pride is inappropriate because it belittles the just cause of the LGBT community. Unlike homosexuals, heterosexuals are not discriminated against simply for being heterosexual. Is that right? We're not discriminated against, are we? We can't even open our mouths in the workplace and say that it's disgusting or that it's sinful or even that it's harmful. In fact, if you don't worship at the altar of homosexuals and declare them as unique and quite possibly higher beings than are we, the breeders, well, then you're looked down upon. You're certainly not allowed to say it in public. Anyway, in a recent report, this is according to the Associated Press, in a recent report, the gay rights group Grupo Gay de Bahia, did I pronounce that right? Grupo Gay de Bahia. I don't know what that means. A pile of homos, I think. This group said that 260 gays were murdered in Brazil, up 113% from 5 years earlier. You know, on Judgment Day, I'm going to ask God about this. I'm going to have him revisit this statistic. And we're going to find out how many of these homosexuals were killed by other homosexuals. And we'll just wait and see. I don't want to draw any conclusions or cast aspersions or jump the gun or any other well-worn cliche that you can think of. But we'll just wait and see on that. All right, now let's move to Washington, D.C. Two shootings, one of them fatal, have occurred in a northeast neighborhood of Washington, D.C., known as a hangout for transgendered people. Due to similarities in the crimes and the suspect descriptions, the case are being investigated as a potential emerging pattern. That's according to police. Both patrol units and the police department's gay and lesbian liaison unit will provide extra patrols in the area. So the Washington, D.C. Police Department has a gay and lesbian liaison unit. So you know that you've done something to offend the captain. If you end up on the gay and lesbian liaison unit and you're walking out there with all the transgendered prostitutes in Washington, D.C. after 2 a.m., get in here, Jackson. I'm really not happy with your performance this week. We're going to put you on the gay and lesbian liaison unit. Go home and get some sleep and put on a dress. And at 2 a.m., I want you to report to the corner of L and 3rd Street over there in the northeast neighborhood. The area where both women were targeted. Now, we don't know if these were actually women because this is a story about transgendered people. They presented themselves as women and they looked like women. You know, ask Eddie Murphy about that. You know, it happens sometimes. I mean, it looked like a girl, officer. The area where both women were targeted near the city's Eastern Avenue border with Prince George's County is a regular focus for joint agency crackdowns on prostitution. Interesting how a neighborhood that's famous for the LGBT community is also the epicenter of prostitution there in Washington, D.C. I'm sure there's no connection there at all. There's certainly none that we could imply in good company without being discriminated against. We have a quote here from Ruby Corrado, a founding member of D.C. Trans Coalition. She says regarding the lesbian, gay, transgendered, freak of nature community, they can't thrive during the day, so they have to go to the times when they feel more comfortable, which is under the dark of night. Isn't there a Bible verse about that? Yeah, yeah. Now, I know it's a New Testament verse. I'm certain I can find it here in the New Testament as I get my Bible open. Warning, 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 Will Robinson, there are Bible verses up ahead. For those in the audience who advocate pluralism and diversity, we know here at the Weekly Worldview that you would like to censor anyone who would ever dare even think about possibly quoting a Bible verse in public. So this warning gives you fair notice that raw, unadulterated truth is about to be uttered. Let's go to 1 Thessalonians, chapter 5. For you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. For when they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them, as labor pains upon a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape. But you, brethren, are not in darkness, so this day should overtake you as a thief. You are all sons of light and sons of the day. We are not of the night or darkness. Therefore, let us not sleep, as others do, but let us watch and be sober. For those who sleep, sleep at night, and those who get drunk are drunk at night. But let us who are of the day be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love, and as a helmet, the hope of salvation. For God did not appoint us to wrath, but to obtain salvation through our Lord Jesus Christ, who died for us, and whether we wake or sleep, we should live together with him. Anyway, the implication being that those who carouse and are out late at night, like the LGBT community out there in Washington, D.C., well, they open themselves up to a world of possibilities that are negative and hurtful and harmful. And, a couple of them got shot over this past week. So we've got another quote here from Jason Terry, an organizer with the DC Trans Coalition. He says, quote, "I think transgender people are generally at risk as they go through this city." Yeah, I would agree with you there. They're generally at risk. Yeah. Citing a recent survey of transgendered people in the district, Mr. Terry said that transgendered people have huge concerns for their own safety on a regular basis. Well, that's what happens when you live a life of unbridled passion, completely undisciplined, out of control, for fulfilling the lust of the flesh at every moment, and hanging out late at night in the part of the city that's known for transgenders and prostitutes. Yeah, you hang out like that, you're going to have concern for your safety on a regular basis. And it has nothing to do with the patriarchal heterosexual society discriminating against you. It's a lifestyle choice. You choose to put yourself in danger and in harm's way, and you shouldn't be surprised when you're in danger and you're scared and you're worried about your safety. You need to return to God for reproof and rebuke and repent. And you won't have to be worried when you're out at 3 o'clock in the morning with a bunch of transgendered prostitutes getting high. All right. Now, let's move on to San Francisco. Transportation Security Administration managers at Los Angeles International Airport are undergoing mandatory sensitivity training after a transgender employee alleged that he, she, or it was ordered to dress like a man, pat down male passengers, and use the men's restroom. Yes, now, Ashley Yang, 29-year-old, actually a boy, who spent 2 years as a security checkpoint screener at LAX, was fired last summer after coworkers observed her using the women's room. According to a copy of her termination letter, she contested the firing, resulting in a settlement that not only got he, she, it her job back, but also mandated sensitivity training for all of the TSA officials there at Los Angeles International Airport. According to Christina Wirtz of the San Francisco-based Transgender Law Center, which helped her file her civil rights complaint, she says, "Ashley lives her life as a woman. Her coworkers recognize her as a woman. Passengers recognized her as a woman. But her employer did not. She was asked to hide who she was in order to earn a living." You know, kind of like Christians are now. We're asked to hide who we are if we want to earn a living. Certainly don't want to bring up a story like this and say, "Wow, this is really disgusting. What a freak. Dressing up like a girl and then going into the girl's bathroom. There was a time in this country when you'd be arrested for that. But now we can't speak about it." So it just proves the theory that either the homos or the Christians will end up in the closet. Do we want to do this? Oh, I want to do this story because I apologize that it's another homosexual related story. I just want to say that up front. But it ties into the Rick Perry story that we opened with from WorldNet Daily. A Christian church in America's heartland is helping redefine the nativity story. At its most recent living nativity scene in December, this church featured two women instead of a man and a woman. The two women were starring as Joseph and Mary, who WorldNet Daily has dubbed Josephine and Mary. According to the pastor, the Right Reverend Linda Butler from St. Timothy's United Methodist Church, she says, "What we emphasized in our nativity scene was that this was two parents, and this is our baby and our story. They're two moms, yes, but it doesn't stand out. This is our baby and our story," said the lesbian pastor. So the nativity story is no longer, it's not God's son and God's story, and God doesn't get to tell it the way he wants to. The United Methodists get to tell it the way they want to, and they say they want to just let people know that there were two parents involved. Not that there's anything wrong with one parent, by the way. We certainly wouldn't want to offend any of those people. But the important thing here is there was two parents. The fact that it was a couple of lesbians, well, you know, it's our baby and our story. We tell it the way we want. By the way, St. Timothy's United Methodist Church in Cedar Falls, Iowa, is a 400-member congregation that welcomes all sexual orientations and gender identities. They feel just fine out there with their story of the Nativity. Finally, not finally, but at least this is it for the homos. No, wait a minute. I'm sorry. I've got two more. Marvel Comics. To reflect the racial changes in America, Spider-Man has been given a makeover. He is now a half-black, half-Latino teen who may be revealed as a homosexual sometime in the not-too-distant future.
So Hispanic and black and homo, same category.
How can you lump in the blacks and the Latinos with the homosexuals? Any self-respecting black man would be offended by this, and my Mexican friend should be offended as well, to be lumped in with degenerates. Anyway, now, this Spider-Man hullabaloo is going on in, it's Marvel Comics' separate imprint. They have another imprint called Ultimate Comics. And the Ultimate imprint is separate from Marvel Comics, where Peter Parker and the normal Spider-Man is still alive and well. So he's still going on in Marvel Comics, but their Ultimate Comics imprint exists in a parallel universe where entirely different realities can take place.
So it's evil.
Yeah, I would think that it's like the evil Spider-Man. And, you know, so he turns out to be a freak. And that's just sad. I used to buy Spider-Man comics. I got into Spider-Man when I was a teenager because Marvel comics were 35 cents and DC comics were 50 cents. So I went with Marvel comics, and I was a big Spider-Man fan. Anyway, not anymore. And certainly not after all that. All right. Now, from Marquee Blogs, after a woman was asked to turn a T-shirt inside out because it read, quote, "Marriage is so gay," while she was visiting Dollywood back in July. So this woman goes, she's trying to get into Dollywood, and they tell her, "You can't wear that T-shirt that says marriage is so gay. If you want to come in the park, you have to turn it inside out." She did. She went into the park and apparently had a great time at Dollywood. But upon further consideration, the lesbian filed a complaint with the park. And the park's press representative, Pete Owen, says that the park has a pretty strict dress code. And Dolly Parton has issued an apology. She says, "I'm truly sorry for any hurt or embarrassment regarding the gay and lesbian T-shirt. Everyone knows my personal support for the gay and lesbian community." Okay, I didn't need another reason to dislike Dolly Parton, but that's it. Dolly Parton, who basically was a corrupt and degenerate sexual figure in country music back as far as I can remember, now she's thrown in with the homosexuals. The Parton statement to the couple involved. The press spokesman gave Parton's statement to the couple involved, the couple of lesbians, and apologized if they were hurt, uneasy, or embarrassed in any way. Anyway. So, all right, Dolly, you're out. As if we needed another reason. All right, finally, ladies and gentlemen, dieting forces your brain to eat itself. Listen to this. Like other parts of the body, brain cells, when you don't eat, brain cells begin to eat themselves as a last-ditch source of energy to ward off starvation. The body responds by producing fatty acids, which turn up the hunger signal in the brain and increase our impulse to eat. Researchers from the Albert Einstein College of Medicine at Yeshiva University in New York said the findings could lead to new scientifically proven weight loss treatments. Tests on mice found that stopping the brain cells from eating themselves, a process known as autophagy, prevented levels of hunger from rising in response to starvation. The chemical change in their brains caused the mice to become lighter and slimmer after a period of fasting, the researchers reported. So, Dr. Rajat Singh, who led the study, hey, aren't there any more people of European or American descent doing any medical research? How come every medical researcher's name I read has like 12 vowels in it, for crying out loud? That's just a side issue. Apparently, they stopped the brain cells in these mice from eating themselves. I don't see exactly how they did it. Maybe they used drugs or whatever. And so the body stopped telling itself it was so hungry, so the mice were able to eat less, and eventually they lost weight. And maybe now they'll develop a drug for people to do that. Anyway, Dr. Rajit Singh, who led the study, he said treatments aimed at the pathway might make you less hungry and burn more fat. A good way to maintain energy balance in a world where calories are cheap and plentiful. That's Rajit Singh. Hey, Rajit, have you been back to India lately? In a world where calories are cheap and plentiful. Oh, my goodness. Was that the end of music? That's the end of the show? We're out of time, folks. Like I say, we're going to be out at the McBurney Compound West for the next couple weeks. We will not be doing the podcast, but we will be back with you before too long, Lord willing. And for now, I just want to thank my friends at KGOV, at Denver Bible Church, at American Right to Life, and at personhoodusa.com. And may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.